Steven.
Big V, welcome back to the podcast. How are you, man?
I'm great, man. The Raps are winning, looking like they have the heart of a champion. And yeah, it's good to have basketball back. Feels like I have somewhat of a routine in my day now.
Yeah, you know, I can't really poke any holes into the Raptors being championship favorites, except for Terrence Davis's mask. But I guess we'll talk about that later. Let's start with our bumping into each other at Subway a few weeks ago. So during this pandemic, I have bumped into you twice. You caught me buying like a 24-pack of Coke at Rabba, and then which you've already exposed me for on a previous podcast. And we ran into each other at Subway, and I think both of us were too embarrassed to acknowledge it online, because that would mean we have to acknowledge that we are going to Subway to eat on a regular basis. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, that is factual. But when the coupons come through...
Yo, the coupons are pretty fire, though.
It's that freelance life.
Yo, the coupons are pretty fire, man. 2 for 1. You know, you get the second sub for 99 cents. Well, I did a whole podcast last week on like restaurant chains in Canada. And honestly, I don't have a problem with Subway at all. I always enjoy their subs. So I'm just going to put that out there.
It's also extremely convenient for us. It's literally like a 1 minute walk.
It's a 1 minute walk. Do you go to the Pizza Nova a lot or no?
No, I cross the street and go to Domino's.
Oh man, you pick Domino's over Pizza Nova?
Yeah, man.
Man, I hate Domino's pizza. I absolutely hate their pizza, man. But yeah. I am on record. I love the Domino's pasta, though.
Like, Domino's pasta. I've never had Domino's pasta.
Yeah, try the pasta sometime. Maybe just add it as a side next time. I don't know. What is it about the Domino's pizza that you think is acceptable?
Well, I just like the customization, because I usually get the thin crust. And they have that deal where it's like you can get a large 4-topping for $12.99. And so I usually get the thin crust with like chicken, jalapenos, some red peppers. Yeah, that's about it, man.
Man, we are in the Bermuda Triangle of pizzas, though, because we got the pizza there as well.
Yo, seriously, that is a problem. It's it is nothing but pizza around us. I guess now like that Fat Bastard opened up.
Oh yeah, the Fat Bastard, but I don't think the Fat Bastard is doing really well. I'm going to give them like another 3 months, I feel like. Every time I walk by, it's empty.
That's fair. That's fair.
They've also got that fake marijuana place.
Oh yeah, they do.
Which is just like never open, and they just have like a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey, but it says Toronto Marijuana Leafs. Wow. And it's like a green Leafs jersey hanging outside. Wow. I don't know.
Siempre is good, though. That's like a good breakfast brunch spot.
Oh, really? Yeah, I haven't tried that either.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right, just expose where we live. So basketball is back. I honestly feel like, I mean, we're like, what, 4 or 5 days into the seeding games. I really feel like this is going to be the best 2-week stretch of regular season basketball, like ever, just in terms of the scheduling and just the competitiveness so far. How are you feeling about the games?
I love it, man. And I love the schedule. Like, someone will call me early afternoon and be like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm watching basketball. Someone will call me in the evening and be like, what are you doing? I'm watching basketball. Someone will call me at night. It's like, what are you doing? I'm watching basketball. It's basketball all day, every day. It's amazing. The games are so competitive. That's the best part. Like, it feels like you're watching a tournament. It feels like that first week of March Madness, where there's like just games on all the time, going down to the wire. And yeah, I love it.
It's just wild to me too, because I feel like coming in, I was one of those guys who kept saying like, 70% of these seeding games are not going to be good because they're not going to matter because there's no home court advantage and all of that stuff. And like you look at it, like, I mean, we're going to talk about the Raptors. Like the Raptors really don't have much to play for, but like they've been super competitive. All these other teams have been super competitive. That's the part that's been like really surprising to me. And like maybe they'll like dial it down a little bit, like the few games before the playoffs. But like every team has just come out trying to win every game.
Yeah, I think the big thing is just knowing that you've had all this time off and now you only have these 8 games to ramp up for the first round of the playoffs, or, you know, a play-in game or whatever it may be. So I think because of that, the stakes are much higher, even for teams that are secure in their seeding. So if they want to get to the level that they want to be at, like even, you know, Nick Nurse in his press conference right now, he was talking about how the bench sort of has to adjust to the Raptors being healthy again. And so it's almost like, you know, they got to get used to their usage when they're coming into the game, when they're going out, because when the injuries were there, their usage was high. They were getting a lot more minutes. And he's like, it feels a lot more like the first 10 days of the season when everyone was still figuring things out. So now, you know, you have this limited window for all these teams to figure it out. And so I think that's why, you know, the stakes just seem so much higher.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this, and I'm actually probably going to write something about it this week, about like certain takeaways from this like bubble format that the NBA might be able to like take away and maybe like implement, you know, in some ways when like the like everything goes back to normal again and we're playing in regular arenas again. And one of the things I really want them to do is to have this kind of schedule where there's just basketball on all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Because see, this is the thing, right? Like when you have these games that are being played all day and it's just the one game, it's like you're showcasing each game. You're making each game matter to the audience. When you put 10 different games on at 7 p.m., guess what? Fans are just going to be like, okay, what is the best game to watch? And so you just focus in on that one game. And you miss, and there's so much talent in the league now that you can honestly just spread it out. Like you don't have to have the, you know, the Lakers play every Thursday night. You know what I mean? And so from that standpoint, like the NBA, you know, they can definitely do a much better job of marketing their product. I mean, they all already do a lot better than some of the other leagues, but they can really ramp it up if they wanted to.
Yeah, I want to see how they can recreate some of the excitement of this, because I just don't remember the regular season being this exciting. And maybe some of it is because we haven't watched basketball for like 4+ months, and, you know, mixed with the fact that a lot of these games, like we said, have been really competitive. But I do feel like there are certain things maybe they can take away to like make the regular season more exciting, like specific things. Like, I don't know, even like maybe like bunch up the schedule where like some teams like within division just like play each other over like a 1 week span or something like that, and they can just market it that way. I just feel like there's better ways to make the regular season more exciting, because the way it is now, and you hear people complain about it all the time, that like the NBA doesn't matter until the playoffs start, and, you know, part of me does agree with that, but I do feel like they can take away stuff here to make the regular season more exciting moving forward.
Yeah, for sure, because what's the one thing we always hear about the regular season, right? That it's a marathon. No one cares about like lap 17 out of 50. You know what I mean? And so when you add context, when you make the games matter, I definitely think that will add to it. And so even for me, like I've always been a supporter. I mean, I know this is never going to happen because of revenue reasons, but I really do think that if the NBA went to a 58 game schedule and spread out the games and made each game more meaningful where everyone's just playing each other twice, I think that would ramp up not only the intensity, but also the attention that fans would give to the games.
No, I totally agree with you. And that's a problem too, right? Like the owners, and to an extent the players too, because the salary cap is tied to revenues. Like they're not ever really going to give up the number of games, right? Like they're going to push for the 82. But I do feel like next season is still going to be an experiment, because, you know, I think we both agree that America is not getting better anytime soon until there's a vaccine. And I feel like next season is going to have to start in some kind of bubble. And I wonder if, like, even like, say, the 58 games that you propose, like maybe they split that up into like 29 games.
Right.
So like maybe teams go to a bubble. Maybe there's two bubbles, kind of like what the NHL is doing. because I'm not sure you can hold 30 teams at Disney World, or maybe you can, but like 29 games, maybe for like 2 months or whatever the schedule is, take a little break, and then 29 games for the second half of the regular season, and then start the playoffs. Because I do feel like they're going to have to get creative with it next season as well.
Well, this is one thing I do feel the NBA needs to get ahead of, because it seems like they're game planning for just everyone being back at their home arenas for next season. But I saw a report that came out from the NBPA where Michelle Roberts, I believe, was saying, well, if as long as tomorrow keeps looking like today, we will have to look at a bubble for next season as well. And so there is no way. It's one thing to get these players to agree to be in a bubble for 3 months. To get them to agree to be in a bubble for 6 to 8 months, that's a completely different question.
There's no way. There's no way they're doing it for 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
And that's why I suggest, like, if they're going to do the bubble, it's going to have to be some kind of staggered thing, mm-hmm. where maybe they stay in the bubble for like 2 months and then take a month off. Although, you know, obviously that would be really weird during the regular season. But I do think the way the NHL is doing it for their playoffs right now, splitting up the Eastern Conference and Western Conference in Toronto and Edmonton, might be kind of a starting point for them. And I also feel like if next season does start in a bubble, I think Toronto's going to have to be one of the locations. Like, if they don't do Disney World, Toronto's going to have to be one of the spots, I feel like.
No question. But then are you going to get into a situation that the Blue Jays had where, you know, the federal government's going to say, hey, we're just not willing to take that risk with the U.S. coming over. So I don't know.
Yeah, but I think the Jays is different too, because the Jays were going to be traveling, right? Like, they were traveling to the U.S. and coming back. Whereas I feel like if you bring the entire Eastern Conference here in Toronto,
yeah,
and just put them up. But, you know, the other problem is, I don't know, like, the NHL probably has to figure out their own bubble for next season as well, right?
Right. Yeah, I guess the thing I'm thinking about is in terms of your idea where, you know, they're coming for a month or two and then they're leaving and then they're coming back again. Like, with the NHL, it's like they're here till it finishes, right? And then they're out.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they have to figure out. It's almost like the league is better off with like 22 teams, to be honest.
I mean, yeah, that's... Like, I mean, all due respect to MJ, no one really cares about the Hornets, and no one ever has.
Yo, chill out, man. He's going to find this podcast, and it's going to become personal.
Yeah.
Even 22 teams is too much, man. Like, let's be honest. Like, I feel like we could be – I mean, the Phoenix Suns are 2-0, so I can't really trash them. But, like, there's a couple of teams in the bubble that don't need to be there. Like, the Brooklyn Nets lost, like, 3 more players today. Like, I don't even know who's playing for them tomorrow.
Yeah. Yo, what about, like, you mentioned Phoenix being 2-0. What about Dallas, man? Like, do you think it's a little weird that they just can't close out these games?
Yeah, so I've been listening to, obviously, a lot of, you know, other NBA podcasts now that basketball is back. So apparently this, like, late game crunch time thing has been a whole thing.
Yeah.
This entire season, right? And it's really weird because the Mavericks technically have, like, the best offense in, like, NBA history.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of their stats, but for some reason in crunch time, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, they blew, I mean, the Houston game, they just needed to box out Robert Covington and they didn't,
right?
Otherwise they would have won that game. But yeah, it's weird. I feel like there's been a lot of blown leads, and I know we're gonna talk about Raptors Heat. Like, the Raptors blew like a 17 point lead in the third quarter. The Celtics were up 20 points on the Blazers yesterday. Like, I don't know if I need to read into these trends, but the games do feel like they're kind of really loose still.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Again, I think it goes back to players just sort of still feeling things out and getting comfortable. And not just with like their minutes and how the rotation's playing out, just like the setting, right? Like, this is a completely foreign setting for them. I mean, obviously some people are comparing it to AAU ball, but they haven't played that in a really long time, except for the super young guys who just, you know, are coming off a year of college. But I think all of that factors in. I do think that closer to the end of the eight games, we'll get closer to playoff level basketball. We have the intensity right now, but maybe not quite the level. And so I do think it'll progress over time and over these games.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Dallas. Has there been a team that has stood out to you, or maybe you're more interested in now after watching them play a few times over the weekend?
I mean, I'm going to stick with the Rockets, man. Like, I just think they're really interesting to watch. I really love watching this version of Russell Westbrook. It's, you know, I felt like he kind of lost the plot after the first MVP season when KD left. That was super exciting to watch. But then I think, you know, he has become a bit too much of a stat chaser. But now I think the way they're designed, because honestly, you just want to see different strategies, right? Like, I think even though there's a lot of different individual talents in the league, and the way they play is different individually, I think as a team, because so many teams are looking for the same thing as far as the shot spectrum is concerned and all of that, I think the Rockets have become a little bit more interesting. Not to say that their shot spectrum is different, but at least now, you know, it's the way they're designed against Westbrook makes things more exciting, I feel.
Yeah, they played like two of the most exciting games. And, you know, low-key, James Harden was playing some really good defense at the end of the Milwaukee Bucks game.
He can defend in the post, man.
Yeah, he's like got a little Kyle Lowry in him. I don't want to compare James Harden's defense to Kyle Lowry, though, because I'm going to get run off Raptors Twitter, which we'll also talk about later. Yeah. No, the Rockets are interesting. You know, I always watch them and I think, because obviously we know their shot profile, and we know, obviously, they like to shoot a lot of threes. I wonder if like that strategy is like a detriment to them, especially in the playoffs, because they only play like seven or eight guys. Because I just feel like it's real. Like, I'm watching PJ Tucker trying to guard like Giannis and trying to guard these like bigs because he's playing the five. Yeah. And then like all of his shots are just like short in the fourth quarter. And I'm just like, I think it's just like too taxing on these guys to play that style over a long period of time.
Yeah, I see that. I think that's why they've become more intriguing to me now after the 4 months off and having that break, and where now they know they just have to go all out for these few months. I definitely think over the course of an 82 game season and then going into the playoffs playing that style is just way too much. But that's interesting if you're saying like just even over a course of 48 minutes things are just tailing off. I think this is honestly, I think this is just the best way for them to play. Mike D'Antoni is not going to change at this point. It'd be nice if he used the rotation a bit more, but at the end of the day, like, I do think they're better off with the 4 months off. I think Harden is best off having had those 4 months, because we always talk about him, you know, maybe taking on too much of a load in the regular season and then not being able to deliver at the same level, if not a higher level, in the playoffs. And so maybe now this time we actually get to see that.
Yeah, you know, not to be like a sports radio guy, but I do feel like these playoffs are like pretty important for Harden. Mm-hmm. Maybe less so much like how far they go, because everyone's got the Lakers and Clippers penciled in to the Western Conference Finals. But I feel like the Rockets just can't flame out again, because every year they just flame out in like the most embarrassing manner.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I think the worst, would you say the one where they just completely flamed out against the Spurs was the worst one? Or do you think it was losing to the Warriors? You know, like last year, KD was injured. They couldn't get the job done. The year before that, okay, CP was injured. But they were up 3-2. And then in each of Game 6 and Game 7, they were up at halftime.
People forget this. They were up double digits in both games, I want to say.
Yeah.
Like, they had a double-digit lead in Game 6. Like, they came out and they were on fire. But again, that just goes back to, like, I'm sure we've had this conversation. Everybody's had this conversation a million times. Like, that's the variance in their playing style, right?
Right.
Like the way they play. I mean, I guess the most variable thing was them going missing 27 straight threes in game seven. Yeah, it's hard to pick, man. I think that series against the Spurs was maybe the first time people started pointing out James Harden and talking about how he was getting tired. I feel like last year was really embarrassing for them just because, you know, people forget, like, KD got hurt in game 5.
Yeah.
In Golden State when the game was tied in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game that, like, I'm sorry, like, you just have to win that game. Like, after KD goes out and it's a tie game, and I'm sure it's, like, mentally affecting the Warriors a little bit, like, you just have to grab that series right there. But they lose that game, but then they go home, and, you know, Steph and Klay just absolutely clown them, and they get eliminated. So I feel like last year was the most embarrassing for them. But I'm also, like, they built such a great team 2 years ago that I've kind of, I know Daryl Morey loves to obviously always tinker the roster and make moves every year. And James Harden didn't get along with Chris Paul, so he had to leave. But I feel like the team 2 years ago, they should have just kept that team together and kept going with that.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. I think that's where, you know, maybe Harden still gets a bit of a knock, right? In terms of the off court, like in terms of leadership, in terms of keeping guys together, the fact that relationships seem to get fractured is an issue. So things seem to be going great with Russ. So, you know, and again, not to put this all on Harden, Chris Paul has had his own issues. So I think it definitely would have been interesting to see things play out. And, you know, you do make an interesting point about, you know, tinkering maybe too much. But I like Daryl Morey as a GM. I think, you know, you need more GMs like him that are willing to just constantly go for it, right?
No, I respect Daryl in that way, but it's just funny to think about the Rockets. I mean, they've been trying to build a championship team since they got Harden from the Thunder, and that's like been almost a decade. Like it started with, like, the first guy that they landed with was Dwight Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to pair up, and that didn't work out, and they've gone through so many iterations. I love that Rockets team from 2 years ago, because that's when Daryl built a team specifically to try to beat the Warriors, and they should have.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe one free agent, I mean, that it goes both ways, but, like, they really thought they had Chris Bosh, right, when the Heat were kind of getting dismantled, and Bosh decided to re-sign with the Heat, and obviously, you know, things played out the way they did after that. But you when you just think about stylistically, you know, Chris Bosh playing on that Rockets team, that would have been pretty special to watch. And that's the type of move you also if that would have happened, you would have looked back and just said, okay, well, that's just tough luck. They did all the right things. So certain situations, I think they're just unlucky. And even in terms of this James Harden narrative, like, part of why I want the 58 games is because then you can also commit to potentially just having the best 16 teams, right? Because there's no sort of bias in the schedule. And so, say, for example, those couple years, if you had at least 2 years ago when you had the Rockets playing the Warriors, if that was the finals, you know, maybe Harden isn't looked at the way he is now because, you know, at least they've gotten to the finals.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And also the 58 is good too, because obviously each regular season game just matters a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was excited about the baseball season before half the teams decided to just still go out to strip clubs and get COVID.
Yeah.
And now half the teams are like postponed. Like the Jays haven't played for like a week, I feel like. Like the 60 game schedule, I was actually, oh, this is kind of cool, even though like traditional baseball people probably hate it. Like, I think it's cool anytime, like, the regular season games just matter more, right? Like, each game should matter a lot. And over an 82-game schedule in the NBA, a lot of those games just don't matter.
It's true. It's true. And, you know, I don't know if this article came out a while ago, but 538 did this story on, like, how many games you need to actually, like, create a meaningful season. And the NBA, it was like way overboard. Like they were basically making the case that you only need closer to like 50 games. And so, I think at the end of the day, if money wasn't an issue, you could do so much more just in terms of catering to players' bodies, in terms of sleep schedules, and in terms of all that, right? But at the end of the day, that's why they're even in the bubble right now. So money is going to dictate all of that. I don't anticipate, like, I could see maybe the 82 game schedule coming down to like 76, maybe 70, but nothing beyond that.
Yeah, I just feel like, especially now, because of everything that's going on with the pandemic and how the leagues have to scramble to come up with different formats, this is a really good time to maybe figure out and put in some of these permanent changes moving forward. And we can't talk about the Rockets again, man. Tillman Fertitta is about to like buy this podcast. We talked about them for 20 minutes. Let's get to the Raptors, man. So, you know, we're recording this after they beat the Miami Heat. You know, they're 2-0, a really impressive win against the Lakers, a really impressive win against the Heat too, to be honest. I don't know. Where do you want to start? I feel like, you know, we talk about these teams getting ramped up and stuff. I mean, I feel like the Raptors are ready to start the playoffs right now.
Yeah, no question. I think there's maybe a little bit of I don't know if concern is the right word, but maybe you feel like they still need these remaining six games to get Norm ramped up, to get Serge ramped up, because they haven't looked their best. But the starting five looks awesome. Like, you know, Pascal didn't shoot the ball well against the Lakers, but I thought his decision making was really good. OG looked phenomenal. Kyle and Fred, like, they just look ridiculous. And like, Fred's defense, like, he is insane. Like, he is, like, I think he should be in the conversation for an all defensive team. I think he's that good. And yeah, Mark, you know, he's just going to make the right play every time. And yeah, that's the team basically.
No, I think, I mean, let's start with Mark. You know, he's still trying to find himself a little bit on the offensive end. I was expecting this new and improved Mark to just come in and like average 20-10 again, like he was 25 years old. You know, but I guess I do have very high expectations. You know,
well, for I every told single you on Raptor.
So we still got the playoffs. yeah. This is gonna happen. And we're still gonna get that Matt Thomas 15-point quarter. Although I was praying that he was gonna have one possession guarding LeBron the other night. Like, I just love when his feet start dancing. But with Mark, I mean, the stats are pretty wild through the two games. I think teams are shooting like, I think they're averaging like 60 points per 100 possessions with like Mark on the floor right now. Right. And, you know, just having him on the defensive end, and especially in crunch time. I mean, the crunch time Raptors defense, like, I feel like a lot of people are talking about like, oh, there's no Kawhi. There's no clear number one option. Which, first of all, is not a concern for me at all when you look at what a lot of these individual guys can do in terms of what Kyle did against the Lakers, what Fred did, you know, against the Heat, and, you know, Pascal rebounding from maybe, you know, a below average offensive game against the Lakers, against Miami. And to me, I mean, their number one weapon in crunch time is their defense. I mean, you look at how hard it was for the Lakers and the Heat today to score. And, you know, Fred was in the middle of all of that, right? Like, he caused that turnover at the end. I feel like every single Raptor starter has a case for all defensive team. But the problem is, like, they're so good collectively, like, none of them are going to get picked.
Yeah, they just don't get enough credit because everyone just sort of looks at Nurse's defensive schemes and what they are as a whole, which is true. But at the end of the day, I think most elite defenses, you can say that about, right? So if you're picking other guys ahead of them, then maybe you need to really look at things a bit more carefully. Because, yeah, I think Fred has been absolutely phenomenal. I think OG, again, the job he did on Bam today, I think the fact that he can guard 1-4 like that is such a valuable asset to this team. Like, he's just coming off defending LeBron. And then it's like, okay, go guard Bam, which is a completely different, you know, physical proposition. But it's like no problem for him.
I had Norm as the X factor going into the playoffs, but I think I'm changing that to OG for sure. Just in terms of what he can bring, like you mentioned, on the defensive end. And I know you wrote about OG after the Lakers game at Raptors Republic. Free plug for you always, Vivek.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about what you saw from OG, especially on the offensive end too, right?
On the offensive end, I think what encouraged me the most was, okay, he's not going to shoot 8-for-9 every game. But in terms of the types of shots he's getting, that is very repeatable. And that is just him showing that offensive awareness where there's a possession where LeBron is just so focused on what's happening on the ball, helping out at the rim, that OG is able to just sneak back door and get a layup at the rim and catch him off guard. You can do that just when you have the offensive awareness and you're saying, hey, I've got a cut here, I can get to the basket. That's an easy layup. Then, you know, when there's a turnover, he's beating Anthony Davis or he's beating LeBron James down the floor, boom, that's an easy 2 points again. And then beyond that, you know, just being ready with his shot. When LeBron James, again, he's always looking to play free safety on defense, right? He's looking to anticipate the next play and push. And with guys like Fred VanVleet, with guys like Kyle Lowry, if you're open, they're going to find you. So staying shot ready, again, you'll get 2-3 of those open looks. I feel like if he can come in with that guaranteed 12 to 15 points a night, I think it changes the Raptors' offensive ceiling.
No, I think like he's the guy that's going to raise the ceiling for this team in the playoffs without a doubt. And you talk about the offense. I mean, people have really been honing in on how he's improved his handles. Still feel like he's got a ways to go, but it still feels like really awkward when he dribbles. But it feels like now like he's got like a quicker first step. And, you know, today he blew by a couple guys too. And, you know, for me, you know, if he can just have a couple of those drives and obviously the way he knocked down threes against the Lakers, I feel like that will just end the conversation and make it easier for Nick in terms of, you know, OG versus Norm for one of those spots in the closing lineup, right?
Yeah, the only time OG has been benched this season to close a game is when he's not giving you anything offensively and teams feel like they can cheat off and they can force the ball into his hands on the offensive end, and then it's like it kind of stifles the Raptors' offense in the half court. But if he's able to do what he's doing now, then there's really no need for Norm or for Serge to be on the court, right? Because of what he offers defensively. And so, again, to your point about his handle, like all you're asking him to do is if on the rotations that other teams make, if you end up with a big on you and you have a chance where maybe, you know, they don't have a great closeout, just go right at them and make a move. And again, it doesn't always have to be to finish. If the team collapses on you, you've done your job. Just make sure you get it out to someone else for an open shot. And I think he's doing that.
Yeah, so the king of Raptors predictions, that would be me. I'm going to predict OG Anunoby is going to win most improved player next season.
Okay.
And, you know, just heard it here first. You know, go bet some money during a pandemic on that. And every time we talk about the Raptors, we have to do two things. We have to tamper with Giannis, and we have to slander the Boston Celtics. So let me pull this off here. You know, I feel like if OG, because he's only 23, if he continues to improve, you know, like this, and the trajectory keeps going up, and obviously you add in what Pascal has already done, and assuming that the Raptors, you know, sign and bring Fred back into the fold, I mean, I feel like OG's improvement is going to do a lot for, you know, what the Raptors can, you know, offer and present to free agents like Giannis.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give a quick shout out to Terrence Davis. I think he won most improved mask today.
Oh, man. Terrence Davis is not getting any propaganda from me for a while. It's all I'm saying, man. Terrence, man, you're an undrafted rookie. The whole city loves you. All we're asking you to do is just follow the protocols and not post conspiracies on IG stories, man. That's all we ask.
Yep. Exactly. But yeah, OG, I think, again, when Giannis has the chance to evaluate his free agent options, if he chooses to do so, then he's going to look at a Milwaukee core that's a lot older than the Raptors. And he's going to look at Toronto and say, hey, Pascal, Fred, all these guys are guys I can play with. No one's going to have to like sacrifice. You know what I mean? You look at how easily those guys were able to play alongside Kawhi and how seamlessly they transitioned to playing without him. I think that's something that could potentially appeal to Giannis. And then with OG, again, you know, he's not someone that's going to demand the ball and, you know, ask for a high usage. He's just going to play off of everyone else. And you look at the defensive potential with Giannis, you know, a lot of times he's going to have to take on the challenge of defending the other team's best player on the Bucks. On the Raptors, you got OG, you got Pascal. You know, I think that makes life a lot easier for him at the wing. And so in terms of the appeal of the roster, then of course, you know, you add in Masai, Giants of Africa, everything. It's a lock, man. I don't know what we're talking about.
No, honestly, just picturing a defensive front court of Giannis, Pascal, and OG, and just picturing like what Nick can do with a player like Giannis, and the players around him. Like, it's like, honestly, I'm not gonna lie, man. Every time I watch the Bucks, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, I just can't stop thinking about, like, if Giannis wasn't throwing these passes to George Hill and Chris Middleton in crunch time, like if he was playing with Kyle, if he was playing with OG, if he was playing with Pascal, I think the Raptors are honestly, they have the perfect coach and the perfect roster for a superstar to just come in. And this, again, goes back to why I have no idea why Kawhi left. I mean, listen, Kawhi, you wanted to go home. I get it. But to everybody who pointed out that Kawhi chose to go back to LA and now everybody's just stuck in Orlando for 3 months, I wonder if Kawhi would have changed his mind if he knew this was going to be the outcome.
But yeah, like, that's the only thing, like, it almost fits too well, right? With Giannis, it's like, what is missing? What possible reason could he have to not play for the Raptors?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, we're biased, like, and, you know, we are obviously thinking of very pro-Raptors. Like, I feel like, I mean, if Golden State gets into the mix, you know, I feel like Golden State will be really appealing.
Yeah, and you talked about Miami as well.
Yeah, I feel like Miami's still there. Like, you just have to give them credit because with Pat Riley, they're always going to get a meeting.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you line up the Heat and the Raptors roster, and, you know, obviously this is going to be 2 years from now, so things can change. Like, I feel like you would pick the Raptors.
Yeah. Does the Raptors, like, having three-peated at that point, deter Giannis?
Yo, all I'm saying is, and we're gonna talk about a little bit about the history of Raptors Twitter later, like, man, if the Raptors repeat, not if, when the Raptors repeat as champions at Disney World and then they get Giannis, like, people gonna really have to log off Twitter, because Raptors Twitter will be officially like the most insufferable thing ever.
No, but it's after the three-peat, right?
Yeah, you're calling the championship next year too, right?
Because that's when he's a free agent, right? It's not after this one.
I almost, yo, this is like the most arrogant thing. I'm almost scared that Giannis is not going to come because the Raptors are going to keep beating him in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, but at some point, if the Raptors like actually beat Giannis like this season in the playoffs, and let's say next season as well, I feel like that makes it impossible for him to come here.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, he's not going to pull a KD. So,
so are we going to have to tell Kyle to not take a charge in game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals and just let Giannis win a championship so then he can just leave Milwaukee peacefully?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's for the greater good, right?
What we're saying is that when the Raptors get to the conference finals, it's going to be a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Like, if they win, they get to the finals, they can repeat as champions. If they lose, they increase their Giannis chances by like 35%.
Yeah. Because I don't know about you, but I'm on the camp of like him winning a title in Milwaukee, like, does not matter. Like, I think he could just as easily as he could look at it as, oh, okay, I have a chance to cement my legacy here. He could also look at it as, okay, job done.
We have seen a history of superstars at Giannis's point of his career not winning a championship go to a better situation. Like LeBron, KD, like those are the two obviously most obvious examples. So, you know, even though I know people are really sick of, you know, every time the Bucks lose a game, you know, the Raptors fan base, a bunch of other fan bases want to talk about Giannis leaving. I mean, we're only talking about that because there's just been a history, especially, you know, in this player empowerment era, of players choosing to go somewhere else where they have a better chance of winning a championship. My second thing is, I feel like it's just going to come down to how they perform in next year's playoffs. Because you look at what happened with KD. I mean, I don't know if you remember, like, Lee Jenkins did this whole profile of KD and how much he loved Oklahoma City. like during his last season there. And like it felt like it was an article orchestrated by KD's people to show that he was going to stay there long term. And then obviously they blow the 3-1 lead against the Warriors, and that pushes him to leave. So I feel like it's all just going to come down to how the Bucks perform in next year's playoffs. And if it ends disastrously, like that's the lasting impression that Giannis is going to have going into free agency.
Yeah, that's possible. Like, and that's the other thing too, right? Like going back to the KD example, he says at some point, I can't remember when, but he said that if the Warriors had won the title that year, then he wouldn't have gone to them. But because they fell short against the Cavs, then he felt like, okay, there's something to prove here. So it's almost like maybe if the Celtics face the Bucks, that the Celtics need to beat the Bucks.
So if the Celtics play the Bucks, we're going to have to root for the Celtics? Is that where we're at right now?
I think so. Because,
man, that's going to be tough.
That also means rooting for Miami to finish ahead of Boston in the standings.
Yo, rooting for all these things just so Giannis comes in 2 years is hilarious.
We've gone so far deep into the weeds.
No, I love it, man. This is all that matters, man. Securing Giannis. Well, the second thing I wanted to definitely touch on is Celtic slander. So who would you take moving forward? Who do you think is a better duel? And I feel like I've literally asked you this before. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, or Pascal and OG?
I will take Pascal and OG.
All right, good, because I was about to have to edit you out of this podcast.
No, but
your 7-second pause was a little bit alarming, though. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, I think it's more just like between Pascal and Tatum, you just have to evaluate who has the higher ceiling. But the thing I like about Pascal is he is an egoless superstar, right? And even in a game like today, Fred has it going. He's like, yeah, let's just keep going to Fred. Let's just ride that. But I feel like with some guys, it's like, yeah, they're winners and they want to win, but they also want to be the reason the team wins. You know what I mean? And yep. And I feel like with Pascal, you know, that's the guy who I want. That's the guy who's literally willing to do whatever it takes, sacrifice whatever it takes. He doesn't have to be, you know, on the front page of anything, if it means he's going to take home the title. And so, again, you know, with OG, if you had asked me this question, honestly, before the lockdown, it would have been interesting. Because just seeing the steps that OG has taken with his handle have maybe changed my perception of what I think he can be offensively. Because if you had asked me before the lockdown what his offensive ceiling is, I would have still been along the lines of like a Trevor Ariza. I don't know, man. Maybe he can be like a more of a Ron Artest who actually has scoring potential, who can get up to, you know, that healthy 17, 18 a game, and take advantage of smaller guys in the post and that type of thing.
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, the Pascal and OG duo, like you mentioned, is so promising. Like, both of them don't necessarily need to be like a ball dominant player.
Yeah.
You know, OG, obviously. And, you know, I'll admit, like, I obviously haven't watched the Celtics as much as the Raptors this year. But, you know, to me, like, watching Pascal, just seeing the way he's able to impact the game, even when he's having a bad shooting night, with what he's able to bring and how important he is on the defensive end, I think is really important, too. I feel like Pascal and Jason Tatum, like, I don't even engage in those arguments because they're just, like, such different players, right? And I feel like players of that caliber, like, it really depends on the situation too. And, you know, thankfully, you know, Pascal has a better head coach than Jason Tatum.
No
And, you know, you're talking about OG Anunoby versus Jaylen Brown. Like, if you want to have that discussion, like, post, you know, quarantine and seeing how OG has improved, you know, I feel like OG's ceiling is way higher than Jaylen Brown's.
Huh. That is interesting. Because I think
Jaylen... Again, I obviously have not watched as much Celtics than the Raptors. So you can feel free to disagree.
No, I mean, I think defensively, there's a significant difference between OG and Jaylen Brown. I think OG is spectacular defensively. Like, I think he has the potential to win defensive player of the year, let alone, like, I think he's pretty much guaranteed to be a perennial, you know, all defensive team.
Fuck, but this makes me so excited, bro. Like, this, you tell me OG's gonna win defensive player of the year and most improved player next year.
Why not?
Am I putting words in your mouth right now, or what's going on?
I mean, why am I here if you're not gonna put words in my mouth?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll watch. You know, I'll learn a bit more about Jaylen Brown when the Raptors beat them in six games.
Offensively, he's got a much cleaner game than OG's right now, and so that's where the ceiling debate gets interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're talking all defense for OG, like, I feel like you have to give him the edge.
Do you? Because think about the value of offense, right? Like, Rudy Gobert is defensive player of the year. He's not even he finally made an all-star team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. But I just feel like, I think OG is in a perfect system too.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the players that he's around and, you know, the defenses that Knicks come up with.
Like, fit changes the conversation completely, right? Like, even in terms of Kyle Lowry, I was thinking about, you look at all the point guards in the bubble. For this Raptors team, who else in the bubble would you take at point guard over him?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, maybe you could discuss Chris Paul, because, like, Chris Paul is still really good.
Right. Yeah, there's similarities there. But again, you know, I feel like, still, Kyle with his three-point shooting and whatnot, like, there's a case. But, you know, Chris Paul, you can make an argument, right? LeBron, if you want to look at him as a guard this season, obviously you take LeBron. But beyond that, like, I'm...
Dame Lillard's the only guy that comes to mind, but, I mean, that's a completely different playing style, though. And Dame doesn't bring the intangibles. I feel like, not that he's a bad defensive player, but he's not bringing the intangibles that Kyle is bringing on the defensive end.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing, right? Like, to be able to play Fred and Kyle together, like, all of a sudden, if Dame comes, I don't even know if you can, like, it. I think it becomes difficult to play Dame and Fred together. And then, and then you look at other guys like Doncic, like, as appealing as he is, you look at those crunch time stats, that's concerning. I just, yeah, like, again, when you make it about fit, like, the conversation changes completely.
Well, that's the beauty about this Raptors team, right? Like, their fit is why people are optimistic about them getting back to the NBA Finals, because everything just fits.
Yeah, all the pieces fit, all the pieces matter. And when you look at, you know, this is something I've been thinking about lately, is you think about all the teams that are going to be in the playoffs. And you look at the rosters, as a roster as a whole, the Raptors are the only one with championship experience. Like, sure, Kawhi as an individual has championship experience that he brings to the Clippers. LeBron James and Danny Green bring championship experience to the Lakers. But as a whole, you look at the key rotations that we'll be playing, no one has the championship experience, the swagger that these Raptors have. And I think that can be an X factor when the series comes down to the final, you know, one or two games.
Oh, I think so. I think it's going to take a great team to beat the Raptors four times in a seven-game series. And that's not to say there aren't great teams out there, right? Like, yeah. You know, I think for all the slander, I mean, Milwaukee's a great team. And they've been a great team for 2 years. That doesn't mean you're going to win in the playoffs. You know, I think the Lakers and Clippers obviously present their own problems. But, like, looking at how the Raptors did, you know, the most impressive thing for me these two games so far, and I don't want to, like, overreact and take too much from it, just because all the factors that you said, like, teams are still working back into their flow and things like that, but both times the Raptors fell behind in the fourth quarter and they responded both times with huge runs. And like we mentioned, that crunch time defense, like, that's not going to change in the playoffs. If anything, you know, it's probably going to be harder to score against the Raptors in the playoffs. Like, you want to talk about, like, people want to point to, like, the Raptors don't have a number one option, all that stuff. But on the flip side, I would argue, like, you give Nick Nurse and that coaching staff, like, just them scouting one single team and focusing on them for, like, a seven-game series. And Nick is obviously going to adjust from game to game. Like, you know, he'll throw a zone at you. You know, he'll throw some double teams at you, and then he'll switch it up the next game completely. I think he's going to have all these offenses just completely confused over a 7-game series.
Yeah, and again, I go back to experience. Like, when I think about last year's NBA Finals, I think if the Raptors were playing, you take that Warriors team, but you take away the experience, like, that series ends in 4 or 5 games. Like, the Warriors literally won a couple games because of their experience. And, like, think about even that game 5 where it looked like Kawhi had closed things out, right? A regular team would have just, that would have been it. But a team that's won a championship, they just have a different level of confidence, and they never believe they're out of it. And they came back and were able to force a game 6. And honestly, as long as Klay was in that game 6, it looked like they were going to force a game 7. And I think that goes so far. And I think the Raptors have it now. And really, there's not a single team out there that does. And yeah, man, it's going to be really interesting watching this run.
Yeah, honestly, to me, like, Toronto and Milwaukee is going to be a toss-up. Like, I do feel like Milwaukee's defense is going to really disrupt the Raptors. But, you know, you can say the same thing on the other side of the floor. I just don't want to hear Toronto grouped in to, like, Boston, Miami, or Philadelphia. Like, to be honest, I'm not worried about any of those teams.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of, yeah, like, I'm with you on that. I still think, like, Boston would be a really fun series. This is where, man, I would have, it really, really sucks that the Raptors don't get to play at home.
Coming off the yep, championship. Yeah, but we also get to avoid the games in Boston, though.
Yeah, but no, I just mean in terms of the standpoint of, I feel like we talk about the players' confidence and the swag that they have now. I just feel like Raptors fans have hit a different gear now.
For sure, man. Just, like, the confidence. Exactly. No, I'm totally with you. I feel like I've talked about this with you or someone else, is that it sucks that Raptors fans are robbed of having to cheer on this team defending their title in the playoffs this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even you go back to regular season games, I don't think they make that 30-point comeback. Like, Kyle was amazing, but I don't think they make that 30-point comeback without the fans, because already, as soon as they cut it to, like, 22, I want to say, the crowd was really into it. That would not have happened a season or two ago, right? There's just, all of a sudden now, there's an added confidence. The Raptors fans have stopped fearing the worst. I think that's the biggest thing. Because for year after year after year, it was always going to be, how are we going to lose now? And I think that's gone.
Yeah, I think so. And you see it on the floor too. Like, if you just look at these two games, right?
Yeah.
I feel like in the past, the Raptors lose both of these games.
Like when LeBron hit those back-to-back threes.
Yeah, OG just came back and was like, cool. Here's 2 threes. You know, the Raptors remind me a lot of a combination of the 2004 Pistons and a little bit of the 2014 Spurs. Just, you know, kind of, I point out those two teams just kind of like the cohesiveness of the five-man units that are out there. Like, they remind me so much of both of those teams. I feel like the 2014 Spurs probably had a much higher ceiling offensively, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But they do remind, like, if you want to, like, put them into kind of a category of championship teams, I feel like this year's team belongs with those two other teams.
That concept of the unselfish superstar, where you don't necessarily, you are the guy, but you don't have to be the guy, and other guys can get involved, and, you know, Manu Ginobili can have his night, and Tony Parker can have his night, and Kawhi can have his night. It's the same thing with these Raptors, right? Like, Fred can have his night like he did. Kyle can have his night. Maybe, you know, Norm will go off and, you know, get into a groove. I think that's where the Spurs similarities are for me. And I think I'm with you in the sense that it really is a weapon, that unpredictability of the crunch time offense in terms of who's going to get the ball. It could be anyone on any night.
Yeah, I think, like, obviously we know that, you know, superstars win championships in this league. But if you don't have that clear number one guy like a KD, a Kawhi, or LeBron, like, the five guys on the floor have to be operating at such a high level, like, kind of a one-of-a-kind level. And I feel like the Raptors have that gear.
Yeah, Yeah. They're just going to consistently maximize their ceiling, right? And you think about, okay, maybe, you know, I've said this where I don't think the Raptors have maybe as much margin for error because of the way maybe a couple of the other teams are constructed. But the gap in terms of their potential and consistently maximizing it, I think that's where they separate themselves from other teams. I don't think other teams are able to channel the best version of themselves as often as the Raptors.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that's the beauty about having a really good team is that you know the team isn't going to beat themselves, right? Because so many other teams, like I feel like if you want to point to like the Sixers, like I feel like every time like the Sixers fans watch their team, they're not frustrated with the talent on the roster. I mean, the talent is undeniable, but it's that they just keep playing a style, you know, whether it's turnovers or, you know, just not playing the right way, you know, on offense or defense. Like those teams just always beat themselves. And I know for a fact that this Raptors team will have to be beat. Like they're not going to beat themselves in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Like you are going to have to fight tooth and nail and literally, you know, scrape and claw the championship out of their hands. Like it is going to be extremely difficult to beat this team.
Yeah, I'm sending this podcast to Chris Boucher next time he accuses me of criticizing anything about the Raptors. This has been a great performance in propaganda. I feel like anyone listening is ready to raise a second championship banner at Scotiabank Arena. Also, yo, honestly, I can't stop picturing Giannis on this team. You're right. It's just such a perfect fit. Like every single reason, everything. Like it's just perfect.
Oh, man.
Also, one more thing about the Raptors. You pointed this out. So they're now 8-2 in their last 10 games against winning teams. And their overall record against winning teams is now 13-14. I've always thought like I feel like there was legitimate concerns, you know, with that record, but I also felt like it was a little bit overblown just because number one, it was the regular season, and also number two, because of the injuries.
Yeah, I think the injuries is the biggest thing. I think when you look at some of the games they've played, you know the defense is going to be there consistently, but against these high-end teams, you do need the offense at a certain level as well. And so in those games, like you even think about the last time the Raptors played the Heat in Miami, the Heat went to a zone and the Raptors literally had to go to Serge Ibaka and OG Anunoby and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at the nail, like trying to run offense out of the zone and attack from the middle with those three guys. Like when the roster is fully healthy, that is never going to happen. So I just think the Raptors were forced to adjust in ways that you wouldn't see with a healthy roster, and those things kind of held them back. But yeah, I think the potential for this team is definitely higher than that sort of plus 500 record indicates. Are they as good as 8-2? Maybe not. You know, propaganda is propaganda. Three of those wins came against the Pacers, but you know.
Come on, man. You're going to disrespect virtual Pacers fan Joe Wolfon like this? This man's about to show up on my podcast in a TJ Warren jersey. Man.
He has a Warren jersey, a TJ Warren jersey over TJ McConnell.
Yo, the crazy thing is he probably has a TJ Leaf, bro. Yo, how many TJs are the Pacers going to produce, man? Come on. They probably traded for TJ Warren and was like, wait, he's not white? With the plus 500 teams and the records, like I look at the top three teams too, how they've done against Milwaukee and the LA teams. You know, they obviously beat the Lakers twice, and one of those times the Raptors were shorthanded in Staples. They had a really competitive game against the Clippers on the road, but they were blown out by the Clippers at home. You know, the night Kawhi came back and got the rings, you know, just to be fair, you know, and not to do full propaganda. The two Bucks games have been interesting. You know, I feel like the first one was really early in the season and the Raptors were getting blown out, but made a bit of a push in the second half to make it respectable. And the last game, I felt like the Raptors, that was playing out kind of like last year's Eastern Conference Finals before the Bucks kind of just figured it out and they smothered Toronto's offense. So I'm really curious to see. I know they're playing next week, and I wonder, I feel like Nick's not really going to play his full starters, especially if they've clinched the number two seed. And I mean, Milwaukee is just one win away from clinching the number one seed. But I would love if it was a competitive matchup next week. I just kind of want to see what it's like.
Yeah, no, I that is definitely my hope, because even with the game you talk about, the one where Milwaukee kind of ran away with it in the second half, again, you didn't have Marc Gasol, you didn't have Norman Powell. So I don't, and the first matchup was so early in the season. That was, I think, pretty sure it was within the first week. So it's hard to have too many takeaways from that. So yeah, hopefully, you know, you're in a situation where maybe Nick and Bud are like, yeah, okay, this is potentially a matchup we want to figure out as much as we can ahead of time. But, you know, you're probably right. The odds are they're probably just going to hold back and save everything. I mean, Bud only knows to coach one way anyway and play the same way all the time. So,
Nah, fuck that, man. Yo, Nick needs to challenge Bud. The game next week, they should play for the Coaches Association Coach of the Year. I think Nick should call out Mike Budenholzer. Yo, I forgot until today when obviously Nick, it was announced that Mike Budenholzer and Billy Donovan shared the Coach of the Year award as voted by the 30 coaches. Yo, Dwayne Casey, reveal your vote. Apparently, Nick Nurse was one vote away from creating a three-way tie.
You know, Dwayne was looking at that and like, watch.
Yo, I know Dwayne voted for like Mike Miller of the New York Knicks, man. Just to be like a pure like spite vote. This guy like didn't even vote properly. But I was reminded today that Masai finished fourth in Exec of the Year voting last year, which I feel like we didn't give proper outrage to, because I think we probably found out after the Raptors won the championship and we were still too busy celebrating.
Yeah, I mean, again, haters gonna hate, man. Like,
yo, fourth though? Like fourth? I would have accepted like second. I think Lawrence Frank finished ahead of him.
Yeah. I mean, in this like, climate, it would just be racism.
No, for real. And if League Pass doesn't get Will and I to do a Raptors seeding game, play-by-play, they're anti-Asian. But man, talk about the NBA and anti-Asian is a really touchy subject right now. Anyways, on to the last topic. The Raptors Twitter, history of Raptors Twitter. So you wrote an article for Complex Canada that is going to come out this week about Raptors Twitter. You talked to me, you talked to a bunch of other people. I believe you talked to Twitter Canada as mm-hmm. well. What did you learn about Raptors Twitter that maybe you didn't know before?
What did I learn that I didn't know before? I would say that I think the points where everyone just sort of looked at it as, you know, therapeutic. I think maybe I didn't look at it that way as much before. I just felt like everyone kind of had their hives and was just, you know, going at each other for different reasons why the Raptors lost. Like, you know, some people were just going to stand JV. Some people were going to kill DeMar. Some people were going to kill Casey. And it was just, I always just looked at it that way. But the therapeutic aspect, which pretty much was unanimous with everyone else, just, you know, being able to vent. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I guess you are just going through it all together, right? And I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, as you pointed out, it's the online Jurassic Park.
Yeah, it really is, man. And I feel like it's really grown a lot over time. Like there's definitely kind of, you know, guys like, I think I told you, like Will was the first kind of quote-unquote Raptors guy that really followed. It was Will and Blake and then kind of introduced me to a lot of people, including yourself probably. And it's just really grown over time. And I think the most beautiful thing about Raptors Twitter is it really does reflect the like the pulse and the personality of the fan base. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, it's like a combination, and I explained this to my friend Larry on the podcast yesterday. It's like a combination of like passion, but also like the insecurity that seeps through.
Yeah.
Like we will just like anything, you say anything about Kyle Lowry and it's going to be a problem. Like don't even when you do those build your NBA rosters like you have $10 and here are the players that are $1, $2, $3, $4, and $5. Like, you better not put Kyle Lowry as a $1 player, because otherwise your mentions are going to blow up.
Oh, no question. And the thing I find hilarious is, like, Raptors fans, like, Raptors Twitter will, like, seek this out. It'll be a random person with, like, no following tweeting out this random shit.
Yo, I've seen them go at, like, random people in Milwaukee who, like... who, like, have had to, like, ban every fucking person in their mentions. And I usually don't get into those, like, crazy disputes. So then, meanwhile, I'm over here, like Russell Westbrook on the bench, secretly sneaking in a snack. Just, like, watching all this unfold. Because I feel like I'm the only person in Toronto that this person hasn't blocked. Yeah. And I get to see, like, all the exchanges. I just think it's hilarious. And that's the part I love about Raptors Twitter, is that they don't make any excuses. Like, like, we just own, like, what we are.
Yeah. I think that's an awesome part of it, too, is just there's so many different personalities that you can consume the Raptors in so many different ways. And this is one other thing that I highlighted in the piece. It was like, yeah, there are a lot of writers in this space, but I feel like everyone offers such different things that will appeal to us. Then there's room for all of us, right? There is someone who wants to read about, you know, KD's basketball feelings. There is someone who wants to get down to the nitty-gritty with the analytics and you know, read Blake. There is someone that enjoys sort of Eric Kareen's ethereal references. And, you know, Lewis does great deep breakdowns as well. And, Will has his 10 things in the podcast, and you've got, you know, Brad breaking down the defense, and you've got Sahal and, you know, Assad coming in hot with the slander. And then, like you said, you know, pretty much that entire Dishes and Dimes crew kind of leads the whole, you know, defending Kyle Lowry's honor. So, yeah, there's just so many different aspects to Raptors Twitter that there's so many different ways to enjoy it. And there's a demand for it.
Yeah, and we were talking about this. Like, I don't even remember what it was like watching basketball, like, without Twitter.
Right? That was kind of another thing that I found interesting, right? Like, when if I asked people what they remember about Chris Haynes tweeting that Kawhi has no desire to report to Toronto, it's like they remember every single detail, right? And obviously part of that is just that it's more recent, but it's also just the way we consume Twitter now, right? Like, if I ask someone what they remember about DeMar tweeting, I got us. Like, yeah, they love the tweet, they remember it, but like, in terms of the details of like, oh, where was I and how did I feel when that happened? That was a much more vague, right? And he tweeted that back in 2010, so the way we consumed Twitter back then was extremely different.
Yeah, and I almost feel like the Raptors being so terrible for so long is almost turned into a badge of honor now. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that a lot of us did sit through a lot of those years. And I think I tweeted that yesterday. Like, you know, just we sat through all those like years, and now we've got a championship, and the following season we've got like the most fun and lovable team in franchise history. And as I tweeted that, I saw a hole in Terrence Davis's mask. So that was unfortunate. But yeah, I think just all those years of just like the Raptors just really didn't matter. Like they were just terrible. Like when you bring up old Raptors players, like randomly just mention players like, you know, like Jarrett Jack. I'm not trying to throw Jarrett Jack under the bus, but I'll think of random guys like a Jarrett Jack. And I'm like, man, spent so many years watching basketball that didn't matter. And now we're getting to watch championship quality basketball every night. Like, it's honestly amazing, and I do feel like we need to appreciate it a little bit, because like we know, it never lasts forever.
Yeah, Mil Palacio is my Jared Jack. Like, watching that dude was just so much pain. Like, I will never forget, and I think I've said this on either yours or Will's pod before, I can specifically remember there was this one game in Boston where Jalen went off. Jalen Rose went off. He was having himself a game. And the Raptors got the ball. Like, the Celtics missed. And Mil Palacio pushed the ball down the court. And Jalen is wide open, like, demanding the ball. And Palacio just pushes all the way, misses, And it's like the level of rage I felt at that time that Jalen didn't get the ball.
Yo, Mil Palacio is an all-timer. Jelani McCoy, do you remember him?
Yeah. Lauren Woods.
Yeah, Lauren Woods. Okay, so I'm on the Raptors all-time roster Wikipedia page right now. So I'm just going to shout out some names, man. This will be mostly in alphabetical order. Hassan Adams. Give me your scouting report on Hassan Adams.
Yo, low-key, Hassan Adams kind of had a Terrence Davis build.
All right, man, come on. Marcus Banks.
Yeah.
Were you here for the Marcus Banks era? Lonnie Baxter.
Yep. Remember Lonnie?
Bro, Anthony Bennett was on this team, man, and that felt like 10 years ago. And didn't they give him number 15? That's when Vince Carter should have cut ties with the Raptors forever, man.
Chris Humphries.
Yeah, this was pre-Kardashian Chris Humphries, too. Like, he was just a basketball player.
Exactly.
Let me see who else is there. Not the Curry you're thinking of. Michael Curry. Remember Michael Curry was out here for a season?
Yeah. Didn't the Raptors... I could have sworn they got him, and there was a stretch where he was averaging like 20 points a game, and it made no sense.
Yo, come on, man. I feel like you're making shit up. Carlos Delfino. Yo, I was a huge Carlos Delfino guy.
Yo, I kid you not. I became such a big Delfino fan that I bought a Delfino Argentina jersey.
That's amazing, man. That's like me wanting a Carlos Arroyo jersey after he led Puerto Rico to a win over the U.S., I think. The aforementioned Juan Dixon. Derek Dial. Do you remember Derek Dial? He was here for one season, 2002. No, I
do not. Yeah, see, I came here in 2002, so.
That's right. Gary Forbes.
Gary Forbes, I remember.
Deion Glover.
I don't remember him with the Raptors. I remember he played for Atlanta, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he's best known with the Atlanta Hawks. Luke Jackson.
Yeah, Luke Jackson, I remember.
Let's see. Who else is there? Jason Capono. That's one of my favorites. I was so excited when they signed him.
Yeah, just to win a three-point contest.
Man. Jeremy Lin.
But that's what it was, right? Like, it was about all these, consolation prizes back then.
Oh, for sure, man. And
Garrett Barton keeping up the three-point streak.
Yo, so this dry cleaning place that I go to around where we live, it's on Wellington, and they have a Derek Martin autograph photo on their wall.
Wow.
So I guess that was his dry cleaning spot. Because I interviewed Derek Martin a few years ago. I think it was for a Timberwolves story. And I actually took a photo and sent it to him. And he was so thrilled. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember. He's like, yeah, I remember that spot. I guess he was a VIP customer there.
Vashawn Leonard.
Oh, yeah, Vashawn Leonard. Yo, the original number two Leonard, man. The
original number two. Yo, that is 100% a Coachella 2020.
Yo, every Raptor before 2009 is a Coachella 2030 jersey, bro. Man, I forgot Sean Marion. He was here for half a season.
Yeah, I remember that.
Man, that was such a waste. Marion was good, man.
It was actually, I thought it was the first time that Bosch and Bargnani actually worked, because Marion just was such a good rebounder that Bargnani could not rebound and it was fine. I actually had more fun watching that team than other iterations. It sucks that, he didn't really care to stick around, but I mean, that was pretty much when Bosch left too, right? What's crazy is that trade with the Heat, I'm pretty sure helped enable the big three to happen in Miami.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. Cause that was when it all started when they traded TJ Ford for Jermaine O'Neal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to shuffle O'Neal out. Man, I love TJ Ford. It's a shame he got hurt. The two guys that I really wish had a different trajectory here are TJ Ford and, I think this is an obvious one, Jorge Garbajosa.
Man. Yeah, I would have loved to see how things would have played out if Garbajosa was healthy. Because that season felt a lot like the Raptors 2013-14, the beginning of the We the North, right? Like it was so easy to root for guys like Garbajosa, Jose Calderon, Anthony Parker, and Nesterovich like came over as like this veteran who had done nothing but win with the Spurs, and Bosch was like evolving into a superstar. That was like my first playoff experience in terms of actually like being here. And so, yeah, I would have loved to see that team like fully healthy go up against that Nets team with Kidd and Vince and Richard Jefferson.
No, there's been a lot of crushing kind of disappointments here. No, Garbo that for sure, man.
That alley-oop killed me for a long time.
Oh, yeah, the game six when Sam Mitchell drew that play up.
Yeah, and Richard Jefferson like just stole the alley-oop.
Yo, that was a problem like back then. Like even when the Raptors made the playoffs, like we were just getting clowned. Like the Nets did not respect us at all.
No, like Josh Boone was averaging a double-double, man.
Yo, Josh Boone, this man was in China 2 years later. I was like reading his blog spot, man. Oh, man. Michael Petras.
Yeah, I remember that.
The time between when Bosch left and until Masai came here, that was dark, man. I mean, after the Vince trade, it was really dark, too.
It was the young
one. Yeah, man, what am I talking about, man? It was dark for like 15 years, man.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, you got a couple playoff years out of Bosch, but, you know, those didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, shouts to that one time I was at a Jack Astor's and Sonny Weems came in, did a shot with a couple of boys and then dipped. Like literally came in, did a shot, dipped.
What stories do I have? I think I was at Circa for a Lupe Fiasco show and Chris Bosch and TJ Ford each had their own like booths, like separate bottle service. And I tried to dap up TJ Ford and he was just like, fuck off. And that was it. No, TJ, man, I wish TJ Ford didn't get hurt either, man. I really loved him.
Same. Yeah, that stinger thing, right, with his back, like,
yep.
It just completely ruined his career.
TJ Ford and Jose Calderon, man. Forderon, bro.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was, yeah, they were, honestly, I thought as a, like, you know, sort of a combo duo, they were really, really good. Like, they just had different styles. And it worked. Like TJ was more of the scorer kind of thing, and Jose was always looking to distribute. That worked really well.
Man. All right, that's enough reminiscing. So in conclusion, the Raptors look like the championship favorites that they should be. And anything else we should take away from their first two games?
Well, the overlapping sort of the overall point I want to make about, you know, us just reminiscing just now, you know, that's why the championship feels so sweet, right? Like we all kind of recognize that we've all been through that together, right? When you've been through all those kinds of battles and watched the worst of it, it makes you appreciate the good times even more. And I, you know, we talked about KD before. I think part of why he left Golden State was because he didn't get what he was looking for. Like he didn't go through the battles with Golden State. He was never going to be fulfilled. And that's why he gets so much of the hate, right? Like people could have saw that coming before he even, you know, as soon as he announced the decision. So, yeah, I do think there is value in sort of going through it with a team and then, you know, being able to soak it all up.
Yeah, except if you're Giannis. Just go through the heartbreak in Milwaukee and then come here and soak it all in, bro.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, I just needed to check you on that in case you were ruining the recruiting process a little bit there, V.
Right. No. My bad. But I mean, this is, again, you know, the Raptors are going to let Giannis win a chip in Milwaukee, right? And then.
Well, appreciate your time always, V. The podcast is actually going on hiatus next week. So appreciate all the appearances that you've made. And I guess the next time I'll talk to you will be at Domino's Pizza.
Anything for you to get to 100.
I appreciate you, bro. Even an Indian match making episode?
Yeah, why not?
People still DMing me when you're gonna do the next Bollywood. They like followed me after the Bollywood episode and then I did 35 episodes about stuff white people like and they were like, this is not what I signed up for. I need to talk to a manager. Anyways, I really appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
Yep, take care. Yeah.
Perfect.